Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Hammond.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. If you like what you're listening to, please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast or leave us all the stars in the iTunes reviews.
Yay.
Hello.
Hi, Hammond. How are you doing,
my
friend?
Excellent.
Good. That's weird that you're excellent because it's been a significantly shitty week.
If it makes you feel better, I'll get pessimistic.
Get pessimistic?
I'm sure it'll come.
Unlike your norm. I was chatting with Hemant as I was doing research, and this thing that's happening with immigration, which we'll talk about, is really like it's really overshadowing like the normal absurdity of the religious right. Like Everybody's really laser focused, which they should be.
Like there are general stories that I'm like, oh look, that's religion gone wrong. And then
but
you
it
realize
just pales in comparison to
systematic torture of children, basically, from the government.
Cool. All right. Okay.
Before we start, let me really briefly just mention, because it's Pride Month.
Oh.
Queer Disbelief, the book I helped edit that one of my writers, Camille Berejik, wrote. It's on sale for the rest of the month for Pride Month. So if you haven't bought it yet, please go to Amazon, give it a buy. Queer Disbelief is the book. It's all about the intersection of religion and LGBTQ rights and everything in between, all the good, all the bad. Thanks. All right, let's talk about this immigration thing.
Oofa doofa, it's rough.
It is rough. So the short of the issue here is that basically the U.S. government has basically separated, I think they said, 2,000 mm-hmm. as of today in 6 weeks, mm-hmm. 2,000 kids away from their parents in an effort to deter immigrants from crossing the border mm-hmm. illegally. And they think, okay, you broke the law, so we're just going to separate your family and screw the kids. Give them trauma. What's that going to do to them?
Yeah, so there's a couple things, like before we even get to the religious element of this, which is disturbing to say the least. From my understanding, I could be wrong, my understanding is most of these people who came across are asylum seekers. So it's not like they are like coyotes sneaking truckloads of, like, these are people who come and present themselves and say, I am seeking asylum because of whatever, whether that's poverty, whether that's natural disasters, whether that's violence in their own country. So I feel like the thing I keep seeing, which is disheartening to say the least, is, well, they did something wrong, so they're going to pay, which, yikes, I would say. Like, I guess,
even if you wanted to say they broke the law, so they deserve to be punished, how is that the punishment you're okay with?
I think that's the thing I feel like this is really reflective in something we've talked about a lot of, like, this sort of black and white of you're right or you're wrong. So, like, if you did something wrong, you're a bad person, you deserve bad things to happen to you. Instead of looking at the shades of gray, which are these people were, even granting you the premise that they did something illegal, which my understanding is they did not.
Some of them did not. Some of them, you could say they crossed illegally,
right.
So something needs to be done, but the way they're going about it is just ridiculously cruel.
Yes. And I just, like, you really have to think about what you're advocating here. It's really, it's disgusting and it's getting alarming. Not that everything hasn't been alarming in the last year or so, but it's getting scarier. And also, even if just the idea that people are okay with this on principle, I feel like I spend a lot of my time online trying to find the root of, like, what's making people have these terrible opinions, because I just, something in me can't say they're just evil or they're just racist or they really are that uncaring. But I think that might be it.
Yeah. They just don't care.
It's appalling.
And it's a whole party thing that they just don't care. They want to deflect blame. Even though if Republicans wanted to put a stop to this, they have the power to do that. If Trump wanted to stop this, he has the power
to do that.
Well,
and the fact that he's trying to deflect this onto Democrats is horrifying. Like, Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
Wait, I actually want to say people who say that, oh, this started under Obama, what was happening under the Obama administration is kids who were crossing the border alone, so teenagers usually, and then that was obviously they were trying to do something with those kids. So when they say there have been kids held, quote unquote, it's there's a difference between that and
ripping a child away while he's being breastfed by his mother.
Exactly.
So Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, was trying to defend this in a speech he gave the other day. And the weirdest thing about that, besides everything, is what he said is to the people who criticize him for what he calls following the law and being tough. He said, I would cite you to the Apostle Paul and his clear and wise command in Romans 13 to obey the laws of the government because God has ordained them for the purpose of order. In that Bible verse, it basically says God gave the government power. You should obey the government, essentially. There's a couple problems with that.
What is the worst part? Is it that he believes that because it says this thing in the Bible, that's why they're justified? Or is it the fact that you can cherry pick basically anything from the Bible and it'll be true?
So, it's both of them because you could cite any book you want to justify, cruelty. And it's so the fact that they chose the Bible, like, why are we basing anything we do off the Bible? If you don't have a good argument for what you're doing, don't say, well, my religious book says this, so it's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, no, that in itself is a problem. Mm-hmm. It would have been, I think, more obvious to people if he had read from the Quran and said, this is where we're getting this from. Then they'd be like, how dare you? But
like
because it's the Bible, they don't care.
That particular passage used to be quoted to justify slavery. Is that some garbage I read online?
It could be. And when I don't remember the specifics, but easily I'm sure I would not be surprised if when, Christians were justifying slavery too, they said it's a government policy. The Bible says this. Mm-hmm. In theory, this is not a comparison, though we can talk about that too.
Yeah.
You could make the argument that, well, the government put Hitler in charge, therefore you should listen. Like you would, I think everyone would understand. No, that doesn't mean you listen to the government. Sometimes governments are corrupt. They are bad. You shouldn't listen to them.
Also, didn't the government kill Jesus? Or did I misunderstand that particular
that
part of the Bible?
That is a fair argument too. And so the fact that they chose not just a Bible verse, which is problematic, but that one, because later on in Romans 13, it says something very different. It's basically saying, welcome the outsiders, welcome people. You can make the argument by cherry picking other Bible verses that Jesus wants you to take in refugees and help the suffering and do what you can for the least of these. You could cite the Bible to do whatever you want it to do. The fact that they chose like the worst possible verse to justify their policy tells you a lot about their understanding of the Bible and the fact that they use the Bible. And by the way, it wasn't just Jeff Sessions doing it. Sarah Huckabee Sanders later on, even when she was asked, where does it say in the Bible that it's moral to take children away from their mothers? She responded, I can say that it's very biblical to enforce the law. That's actually repeated a number of times throughout the Bible.
Like, did you see the video clip of the reporter like yelling at her like, you have kids, how are you? And she
didn't answer that question.
No, she didn't.
And people got mad at him for yelling at her, even though I don't get why the press corps, the next question should be answer that guy's question, because I would like to know
why
that
did they
too.
Let her move on.
So
a couple weeks ago I was going to talk about this and then I just sort of scrapped it.
And by the way, separating separating children from their parents, that's not U.S. law. That's just like Donald Trump Republican dickishness. That is not the law we're defending here.
If we read that this was happening in the Middle East, it would be a humanitarian crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of weeks ago, I brought this and I didn't, I just scrapped it. But somebody wrote a kind of cool article about 10, I think it is, verses that say why we should help immigrants. And she literally just, like, she broke it down by kind of a summary point and then literally put the verse. So it's leave food for the poor and the foreigner. God loves the foreigner residing among you. the sin of Sodom is that they did not help the poor and needy. Don't oppress a foreigner. Don't deprive foreigners among you of justice. Do whatever the foreigner asks of you. Leave your door open to the traveler and love your neighbor as yourself, which I thought was a big one, but I guess my biblical scholarship is not strong.
And by the way, just to be clear, there are so many religious organizations that oppose what the Trump administration is doing. There's no shortage of them.
Actually.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Franklin Graham came out against it.
Yeah.
Did you hear about
that? He did. He said it was devastating to see immigrant families ripped apart at the border. And, like, when Franklin Graham, like, says something sensible,
right,
you kind of perk up. Because, like, that never... It's like Pat Robertson saying marijuana should be decriminalized, which he has said.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, did you just say something sensible?
Stop clocking all that.
Yes, exactly. But Franklin Graham.
Yeah, it's disgraceful and it's terrible to see families ripped apart, and I don't support that one bit. So credit where credit's due.
So again, who is this policy? Who's in favor of this policy?
Racist people on Facebook, according to my feed. I think it's really interesting that they're like, oh, it's a deterrent. But I feel like immigration laws change pretty frequently, and it's not like people who are fleeing oppressive nations are like, oh, I'm going to go.
What are they going to do? Leave their kids at home or something?
Yeah, like that's the other thing. It's like, if somebody is risking this much to get to the United States, what are they leaving behind?
Right.
And it's just, I don't know, it kind of rings similar to me with what I see a lot is these are asylum seekers. These are people leaving dangerous situations. And a lot of people are like, well, I heard a lot of people are faking that. And to me, that rings really true of like in the Me Too movement and all that of like, well, women are coming forward and telling their stories.
Yeah,
I heard a lot of people are faking it.
Do you believe the victims or what?
Right.
I don't know the details of this, but I heard a story that when all those immigrants, maybe from Syria, were trying to relocate to Germany, wherever they were from, but it was like a million people that were trying to relocate, and Angela Merkel, she was saying, yes, let them in, and she got a lot of pushback from her own people. And her response is like, well, where are they going to go? Like, we are a country that lets these people in because that's the right thing to do. Yeah. I'm paraphrasing here. But, like, that attitude is nowhere to be found right now because Republicans. So.
And I think what's really horrifying about all this, Hemant, please, mm-hmm. you're drunk already, those mm-hmm. two sips. I think what's horrifying about this is that they're now using these kids who are basically being held in prison camp. I mean, there's no other way to put it. They're like literally in cages or hollowed out Walmart, which, God, ugh. And they're literally holding these kids hostage to get some bills passed. Like, that's what they're saying. Like,
yeah, the compromise is...
be sad if something happened to these kids if we don't get our immigration policy.
So give us these other stupid things.
But what they want is reduced legal immigration, mm-hmm. which I guess I don't... Never in my... And we live in a fairly immigrant-heavy area,
Pretty diverse.
I've never in my entire life felt like something was taken away from me because my neighbors are from India. Like, so this idea that, okay, fine, like, I get where you're coming from with illegal immigration, maybe. Again, granting the premise. Why do you want fewer people to come in? It's not like, I just don't understand. I really, 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 really
we
don't.
We stole it from other people. Now they can't take anything from us. Or, I don't know the mentality.
A tweet that was like, isn't it weird that like a lot of evangelicals are sending people overseas to preach to the people who are trying to get into the country right now? Like, why are you going to South America to proselytize? And then they come here and you're like, no, go away. You're scary and brown.
By the way, citing Romans 13, like, just listen to the government. We know what's best. You should obey that sort of idea. I don't remember evangelicals mentioning that when Obama was president. It just seemed to come up now.
Or like the Kim Franklin, was that her name? The Kentucky...
Oh, Kim Davis.
Kim Davis.
Yeah.
Who's Kim... The
difference that I heard in that case is she works for the government. Therefore, it's okay for her to do whatever, even though she was disobeying a different part of the government.
That's not how rules work.
She's still
work,
a bigot.
My dude.
But anyway.
And also, like, since when is the GOP the party of the government knows best? Let the government do... Like, it's so impressive how they are willing to, like, hop from like stone to stone to cross this horrifying river to like get the results they need. It's insane. It's unconscionable and really depressing. And I've actually, I know myself pretty well. This is one thing I'm not like dug into because I don't think I would react very well. So I know this mostly. And I know somebody talked about going through one of these camps and there was like a huge mural of Trump, yeah. Which, hi, 1930s Germany. Good to see you back. We missed you.
Yeah.
And you're
that was Jacob Sobra from MSNBC has video of going through one of these camps.
Yeah, I couldn't
seeing
watch
that mural.
That.
It's disturbing.
It's not something I.
Do you want to go to a happy story? I kind of have a happy story.
We have happy stories on this
I know,
podcast.
It's weird. So in Canada, today morning.
Oh, I have this too. Today morning?
Today morning. this morning.
Oh, we're recording this rather on Friday the 15th. It's about 5 o'clock.
So here's the setup for this story. There is a law school in Canada that's a proposed law school. They proposed it about 5 years ago. It's in British Columbia. It's Trinity Western University. They said, we want to start a law school for our Christian university.
Yeah, so Trinity Western exists already, and what they're proposing is an extension with a law school.
Right.
Which took too long to understand.
And they said, I think this was 2013, they said, maybe 2011, they said it'll open in 2018, but you got to do a lot of work before it gets started.
Now.
I know, you got to do a lot of work before this stuff gets started. And basically, one of the issues that happens is they say, you know, we're going to set up a curriculum. We're going to tell you what classes we're going to have and what the kids are going to learn. Mm-hmm. They also need buy-in from all the different legal societies in different provinces saying, yeah, when your people graduate, we're going to take their diploma seriously if they pass the bar exam or what their
version
of it.
See, that's the thing I definitely did not understand. Is that exclusive to Canada or is that...
I mean,
is there a similar process in America? You're married to a lawyer. She knows law.
Sure. I mean, you have to pass the bar exam in Illinois, and then the Illinois Bar Association says you could practice law. You're fine. And you got to make sure you're keeping up and you don't get any, whatever, strikes against you and stuff like that.
Because I know this is so ignorant, but your law degree and passing the bar are two different things, right?
Yeah, you can get the law degree saying you passed the classes, but the bar exam is you're ready to practice law.
Can you do
it's
the
like
other way around?
That's a good question. I don't actually
Thank
know.
You.
But like in medical school, same thing, where you could graduate from med school, but you still got to pass your boards.
Gotcha. Okay.
After your second and fourth years. Like there's a process you got to go through in all this.
Right.
To get, you know, the credentials you need. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, just about every province in Canada said, yeah, when your people graduate, we'll treat them like other lawyers. Mm-hmm. That's not a problem. Three provinces said, no, we're not going to take you seriously. Ontario, British Columbia, and Nova Scotia said, when your people graduate, we're not going to accredit your school. We're not going to count your degrees.
It's in British Columbia,
right? It is in British Columbia.
So that feels like a big, big loss for them, huh?
Right. And basically, what they said is, it had nothing to do with the classes or the material they were going to learn. They said, Trinity Western University has a policy that is basically anti-gay. All students have to sign a statement saying...
It's a community covenant.
Community covenant saying that, quote, sexual intimacy is only reserved for straight couples.
Mm-hmm.
So
Straight married couples.
So if you are a gay married couple, which is legal in Canada, if you are not allowed to have sex, or at least the students say that is a problem, mm-hmm. It is treating gay people differently than straight people. Okay.
And it's
so that's
mandatory to sign. If you go to this place, you have to sign it.
And so basically these Ontario, British Columbia, Nova Scotia was saying, if that's a policy, that is a policy we can't support, mm-hmm. even if you know what you're doing legally, even if your lawyers know how to law, that's a policy we can't get behind. So we're not going to reward your school for having this bigoted policy.
Mm-hmm.
The school sued back in these three areas. They basically sued the law groups that passed these, like the bar associations mm-hmm. of those respective places. And without getting into details, because I don't want to screw it up, you had mixed results in the courts.
Yes. There were two different aspects to the suit or two different suits.
Yeah, basically in British Columbia, Trinity Western won the case. In Nova Scotia, Trinity Western won their case, which is to say, if the kids pass law school, they get to be lawyers. But in Ontario, the school lost. So whenever you have like appeals courts saying two different things about the same situation, that's when you want to bring in the Supreme Court to sort it out, same as the U.S. And today, the Canadian Supreme Court, this is weird. They issued two separate rulings.
Oh, okay, maybe that's what I was thinking of.
One for the British Columbia case, one for the Ontario case. Both cases, they resolve the same way. Even though we're talking two different decisions, they're basically copy and paste in a lot of ways.
Okay.
Just with slightly different details. The same five judges said, you know, they basically what they said is, we're ruling in favor of the legal societies. We're saying that every one of these legal groups has the right to say, we're not going to admit your graduates as lawyers. It's a huge blow to the school.
Right.
It's a victory for human rights.
Yeah.
So that's great. It's a huge blow to the school. But basically, you had five judges saying, here's our decision. You had two other judges saying, we wrote concurring separate opinions.
Right.
And then you had two judges saying, you're wrong, and they wrote joint. But basically, there were eight opinions in all for these different cases. But the long and short of it is, these cases were won by the civil rights people, 7-2 in each situation. That is good news for civil rights.
Yeah. So I'm actually really glad you had brought this up, because I had this on my list to talk about, but you clearly have a greater understanding of what was going on. Just some things I want to add that. So the Supreme Court said it's, quote, proportionate and reasonable to limit rights, limit religious rights in order to ensure open access for LGBT students. So this wasn't a, like, technicality thing. This wasn't, like, the cake thing where it's like, like, it was, from my understanding, and God, I'm almost certainly wrong, but, like, it's setting some kind of precedent or at least an indication of we're going to protect LGBT people over...
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. This was not a technicality. They said we have two competing ideas here. One's this quote-unquote religious freedom that the school is pushing for. The other is, you know, human dignity and respect.
Right.
And when those two collide, we're going with human dignity and respect. And you're right. They basically said we have a public interest in promoting equality by ensuring equal access to the legal profession.
Right.
Because if you're a gay student who is not ashamed of your homosexuality, you can't go to Trinity Western if you think that gay marriage is fine.
They found that it would exclude LGBT students and put those who... So exclude them from the school, period. But also anyone who did attend was put at risk of, quote, significant harm.
Right, because they basically treat you... They took it very seriously. Now, what I do want to talk about is this is a big difference in how Canada did decide this case and how the U.S. would have decided this case. Because in the U.S., we have a very different policy when it comes to all of this.
Okay.
And put it this way, if you graduate from Liberty University's law school, you're a lawyer. Because the thinking is, we don't really care what your religious beliefs are. You still have to understand the law. Mm-hmm. You have to know how to apply the law and think about these things. If you disagree with the law, which they do when it comes to like LGBT rights, it doesn't matter because you still got to pass the bar exam.
Right.
Once you pass the bar exam in your respective state, you're good to go. What you do with your degree is up to you. So if you want to work for a group like one of those Christian right groups to try to tear down these laws... Whatever, you're still a lawyer. It's kind of like saying, and this has happened in the past, what if you're a creationist who tries to get your PhD in, like, geology?
Right.
So what do you do? And this has happened before. You kind of have to assume the Earth is billions of years old, even though that goes against your belief. So,
I mean, if you're going...
This happened in the past where someone got his PhD in, I think, geology or geoscience. He wrote a thesis. He defended his dissertation using proper science and doing all the stuff you would expect a PhD student to do. Mm-hmm. But if you ask him, do you believe any of the stuff you're defending here? He'll say, no, I believe the Earth is 6,000 years old. And the question was, this was a controversy at the time.
But Hemet, why?
Why what?
Why would he do that?
Because... Now he gets to say he's a doctor in this field from a legit university, and he can use that to promote creationism. So the point
is... Somebody had to be footing the bill for that, right? There's no way this dude's like, I'm going to take out...
He did the work.
...hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of student loans put a doctor in front of my name.
It was in the New York Times because the question is, what should the school do in this situation? And all of his professors were like, he did the work we expect any graduate to do. He gets the degree. the fact that he doesn't believe any of it is a separate issue.
Yeah, it feels really thought policey to be like, well, do you really believe this thing? Right. Like, I don't know.
And so going back to the Liberty University case, if you're a fundamentalist Christian and you graduate from law school, you don't just magically get your law degree. I mean, it's not like Liberty's law school is, quote unquote, worse than any other law school. Mm-hmm. You still got to pass the same standardized test as everybody else. You got to show that you know what you're doing, even if you don't believe the law is right in these areas.
Yeah, and I have to think that the same way, like, what college you went. So I could have an English degree from, like, Ball State, where I went, or an English degree from Harvard, and, like, it's technically the same degree, but people will definitely look at my resume and be like, I think we'll take the Harvard grad,
and
thank
that's a
you.
Different issue, but no one's
but,
saying,
but so,
like
if you, what I'm saying, though, is, like, if you go to one of these things, like, you are taking on the identity of this, so, like, it's similar but different, I guess, from the Canadian. Anyway, go ahead.
The point is, we don't punish Liberty students for where they went. It's kind of what they do with their degree.
Okay.
In Canada, they are punishing you for where you go. They're saying if you graduate from Trinity Western, your diploma, in theory,
worthless.
Could be worthless if a law society, a legal society in Ontario says, we're not going to accept you. We're going to say you can't be part of the legal society. You can't be a practicing lawyer in Ontario. The court said, yeah, that's fine. So there is a religious freedom argument to be made there. Alliance Defending Freedom, one of those Christian right groups, they're based in the U.S., but they do have Canadian lawyers, too. They were making this argument this morning, basically saying freedom of religion and association is not only essential for faith-based groups, but for the functioning of democracy. Basically, they're making the baker cake. Like, he has the religious freedom to do it, and how dare you go in the other direction? I would say the students... Here's why it's not necessarily totally hypocritical here or something. The students still have a right to their beliefs. They can go to any law school they want. They could still graduate from their law schools. They could still hold those bigoted beliefs. Trinity Western can still have its, whatever, the community covenant. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, if they want to have a law school, the people who kind of decide if your diploma counts, they're saying, no, not if you're treating gay people this way. We're not going to count you because you can't defend that.
Right.
That goes against everything we stand for. We don't have to accept you. Mm-hmm. And the Canadian Supreme Court said, yeah, they have a point. So we're going to side with LGBTQ rights, human mm-hmm. dignity, respect. That matters more than you getting to be bigots because of your faith. There's a part of me that says, if it was the U.S., I might actually go in the other direction and say, you know what, if you graduate from whatever, a fundamentalist Christian law school, but you did all the work and you passed the bar exam, yeah, you get to be a lawyer. That's how it works. But in Canada, it is different laws. They have different values. And I'm not saying I'm upset with this ruling because they went on the side of dignity and respect. And the laws are different.
And the idea is maybe we should discourage universities from having this sort of like arcane rule about sex in college. Lol. Like, what do you?
Granted, they're not all like 19 when they're going to law school. A lot of them might be older, but they might
but
be
I mean,
married.
The covenant exists for their undergrads. So,
yeah, it does.
Like,
yes.
I mean, that's fine.
So anyway, it was interesting to kind of, this has been going on for years, and of course, the lower court battles have been going on forever, and I've kind of gone both ways on this. I kind of see where the law school's coming from, but this isn't the U.S., so it's like, you know what, you're under their rules.
Yeah, and if I'm ignorant about U.S. law, like, Lord knows that I'm a moron about, like, Canadian law, so I'm going to refrain from commenting too much more.
Jessica had asked me, you better have something like that you could just rant about. So I got you a story you can just rant about.
Oh, God.
Okay. Wait, get this. Father's Day. Hold on. Yeah, drink up. Drink up. So Father's Day is this weekend, or so I'm told. I've lost track of time. There is a group, anti-abortion group, called Save the Storks. I don't know why, but that's their name. They
I'm
put out
so
a series of video.
Just because it's alliterative doesn't mean it's clever. Is that what you want me to rant about? A bad title?
Not even close. They put out a series of videos starting this Monday, like one a day. And the videos, you know, you would expect, what would an anti-abortion group kind of do leading up to a big holiday or something like that? Maybe you hear from mothers who are like, I regret my abortion. Let me tell you my story. You're making a face at me while I talk.
I hate it.
No, it gets worse.
No.
Yes.
I'm going to be back here because I'll be yelling.
They have men talking about how they're traumatized by the abortions women had.
Heaven, how dare you?
Said one guy,
oh, Christ.
I am the father of five, but I only raised three of them.
Wrap it up, my dude.
So basically they featured all these men saying my partner at the time had an abortion and this has traumatized me to this day.
Cool. Sorry.
Even though they,
sorry, Doug.
All of them, I watched these videos, all of the men were... Complicit's the wrong word. They didn't have a problem with the abortion when it happened. One of the guys was like, I would pay the bill for it. I told her she should have the abortion. It was a two-person decision. It's not like they didn't want to have one and the women did and they ran off and did it and now the men are scarred.
Which is also fine.
But that's at least a different story. That's not the story these men were telling. They were like, well, I agreed to an abortion before, but now the words they used are... I bear the scars of abortion.
I'm actually going to go. I've had enough of
this. No, I'm not done yet. To be clear, if you don't want to have an abortion, let's talk about...
I'm going to take this one. I'm going to get on serious. You keep talking.
Chug it. Things you could do if you don't want to have an abortion. Stop having unprotected sex. Get a vasectomy. You can make sure you have access to contraception and push for laws that require insurance providers to cover birth control. Or stop blaming women for traumatizing you because you couldn't keep it in your pants.
You know, Hemant, you know, I just had a realization. Mm-hmm. I just had a, forgive the expression, come to Jesus moment. That was funny on several levels. Sorry,
that was your pity laugh.
That was a good joke. Come to Jesus. Because it's religion
this.
And it's coming. It's extremely funny.
There are people laughing right now.
You know what makes good jokes when I explain it?
you know who we never saw in the videos? The women. We never heard their side of the story
because
they don't
matter.
The
whole abortion debate, Hemant, is that we just don't hear from dudes.
I know. Abortion. Why won't anyone think of the men?
I just...
Yeah, and by the way, hey, mother of three children, why don't you have two more?
Yeah, that's definitely the problem. Come on now. Is like she doesn't have enough human children. In a
By the way, the first video they put out, save the storks. The first video they put out, the one that got most of the views, if you sort the comments on Facebook by like relevance or whatever, the first comment was just like, "You've got to be kidding me!" Like someone just ripping them a new one. But basically, as you watch these videos, like, just to be clear,
most
women do not regret their abortions. We're talking like 90% are fine with their decision well after they actually go through with it. their lives. One guy, my favorite part of the video, one of the guys who said he was adamant that she have one and even agreed to pay for the abortion, he says his life was ruined afterwards. And he resorted to drinking a lot and doing marijuana because abortion is a gateway drug for marijuana, which is a gateway drug for everything else. It goes on. I went to Save the Storks website.
Stop saying it. Like it's a real thing.
Here's what they said. I'm going to quote this because it's insane.
Oh, God.
There are 55 million plus post-abortive men in this country. I'm still quoting. Men who are suffering alone from the effects and trauma of an abortion. Unquote.
Heaven.
55 million.
I need you to triple check that this isn't The Onion.
It's totally legit.
Because
55 million men are like these guys in the video saying my life is over because like a woman that I impregnated
didn't have a baby. That I would have been a deadbeat dad.
Right. And you know what you also don't hear in the video, which I was like waiting
anything
for this?
Anything logical or reasonable.
I'm like, well, what are you doing about, if you don't like abortions, what are you doing about it? What are you doing to convince the
He's
government?
He's crying to a camera.
That, like, yeah, no, that's all they're doing. They're not telling the government to get affordable health care or, you know, childhood education or not promote abstinence-only sex ed.
Yeah.
No, they're not doing anything useful to prevent abortions or to make it, that's the wrong word choice, like to prevent people from needing to get one because they could stop
to prevent
the process
unwanted pregnancies.
Yes, they're not doing any of that. So like, happy Father's Day. These men want you to feel bad for them, women. Feel bad for them. Why aren't you crying for these men who have suffered so much because, you know, you killed a child?
I'm sorry you're not getting a good rant out of me. I'm just so... like, how the... like how and why? How, why, and... how dare you?
I can't believe they think these are convincing videos.
I cannot imagine the kind of person.
Think of the thought process you need to, because they had to have a meeting about this somewhere where they're like, well, we need to find men to do the video. We need to get the camera people, because they look fine as far as videos go. You need to get the light and sound and camera people. There had to be a long process to get this happening.
This went through a lot of hands, and
yes,
nobody was like,
and no one said this sounds like a horrible idea.
So
save the storks.
Don't stop saying it, Hammond. I cannot believe this is a real thing. I'm
totally
so
real.
Post-abortive. What was it? Post-abortive men?
Post-abortive men. By the way, there are about 120 million men in the country. So we're talking about half of them.
Wow. That's impressive.
Are sitting around wallowing in the sorrow
sure.
over the abortions that we didn't have.
Yeah. And we did have. You did have. Oh, that you didn't have. That the
Personally, yes.
Wow. I would love to see the alternate video of somebody who, like, knocked their girlfriend up when they were 16 and... now is... Okay. Are men ever happy? Here's my question, Hammond. Here's my thesis question. Are men ever happy? Because...
no.
These men are unhappy because they didn't have these babies.
Yes.
I feel like every other piece of media that's shoved down my throat is... the story is white men have a family and a wife and a house and a decent job and they're fucking miserable. So my question is this. Is there a problem with men, period? Because apparently you don't like us when we have your babies. You do not like us when we do not have your babies. And by we, I mean the human woman race. What is your fucking problem, white dudes? Like, you're running the country? Maybe, like, take a step back and be like, hey, let's take a week and stop complaining for fucking once in our lives.
I didn't say all the men in the video were white, but they were all white. I'm just pointing that out.
How did I know? Did you just tell me psychically?
Yes.
I just can't. Oh, I just...
they bear the scars of abortion.
Oh, have you ever seen the movie... God, I might even talk about this in the show. Have you seen the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
No.
Do you know anything about it? How basic
title.
Do I have to get?
Very.
So it's about a dude who... aliens... and that's the movie.
So, thank you.
So essentially, like, I think I said Mikey and my husband and I are doing the, like, watch all the AFI movies, and so we were watching that. I'd never seen it. It's a Spielberg movie.
Okay.
You know Steven Spielberg?
Heard of him.
Jurassic Park?
Okay.
Okay, cool. And so the story is this dude who's a professor at Ball State University, chirp, chirp, and he lives in a perfectly nice house with a perfectly lovely wife and two regular human children and is fucking miserable because mental health is a responsibility of everybody around you and not yourself. Anyway, so he like starts to believe it, like something happens with aliens and then he goes into a spaceship and that's the end of the movie. It's like 2 hours. But that's basically it. So this dude, I want to summarize it one more time. This dude had a wife and a children and was raising them and was like a professor at Ball State and was like, fuck this noise. I'm go up with the aliens because you children, you, my human children, whom I raised with my wife, who is my partner, suck. So I'm just going to go jam out with the aliens. See you never. That's the movie. And he's the hero of the movie. It really, like, come on, white dudes. Like, it's not that bad. Just get on antidepressants. If you're that miserable with your life, talk to the therapist. Do not ditch.
I cannot say this enough. Someone made online.
No,
which is,
one more. Okay. I cannot say this enough. If you men are unhappy with your life, see a therapist, get an antidepressants. Do not, under any circumstances, go rock out with the aliens. It's not the solution. Go ahead.
Yes, back to the abortion men from Stave the Storks.
Stop saying the name.
They, after weeks of like talking about incels and the involuntary, the guys who can't get any.
Yeah.
Now, I thought like, well, that's pretty, the people lashing out about that, that's, you can, they deserve to be criticized for some of the things they've been doing because they're
nightmare
and then
monsters?
Then you hear these people, it's like,
man, women just know every way to fuck up their lives, huh?
My favorite comment online came from someone who said to the guy who says I'm the father of five, his wife should chime in, well, only two.
I just wow. And yeah, and you touched on it before, and I think it's, I feel like I say this every fucking week, but it's always worth revisiting that if your concern is the welfare of the unborn, as you so fondly put it, there are ways to keep abortions from happening. And we know them because they work, and we've seen them work, and we've seen your garbage ways not work. So, education, access to birth control, early childhood education, maybe not, like, basically punishing women for having kids by not making it insanely expensive to rear children and somehow still like paying. It doesn't matter. I'm just mad about everything right now, so that's not going great. This garbage doesn't work and it shouldn't work, and I can't anymore. You know how I just can't.
You should write a letter to these people.
Speaking of letters,
yes,
are we done with?
Go for it.
Okay, so I actually had brought a story. And it was really brief. It was just the Faith and Freedom Coalition, which is an evangelical group. They are really, really gunning for the primaries. Excuse me, the midterm elections. Mm-hmm. So their goal is to hit $20 million, or 18, I think.
They want to contribute $20 million to these primary campaigns for Republicans?
For Republicans. So they heavily invested during the 2016 elections, and they want to improve voter turnout because there's a lot of, I mean, historically speaking, when you have the first midterm after a presidential election, generally the other party does very well in the midterms. That's just historically true. So Ralph Reed is the chairman of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. He said, we're going to make a bigger effort in 2018 than we did in 2016. If you remember, 2016 didn't go super great for the Democrats. We think our people are going to come, but we also think are going to come in really big numbers. This is going to be hard fought. So I just wanted to bring that up. Like, oh, don't worry. Evangelicals are still...
They're still back in this administration, and they're going to vote, and they're going to put a lot of money into the election.
Yeah.
If you're not...
Hey, guys.
Get registered in your state.
If you're not registered, register. That's it.
Like I
know
the
women's... Like, if you take nothing else away from this dumb podcast, like, register, though.
The Women's March was, right, the biggest protest ever.
Both
it
years,
It would
I
be
think.
Amazing if that sort of energy, that sort
that,
of
like,
mentality...
Groundswell.
Came out on election day too, because he'll still be president. Mm-hmm. You could stop all the shit.
Yes.
You could just put a stop to so much, and that would make him angry for 2 years.
Yeah. Like, think of the tweets.
Oh man. Think of for all the misery he's caused everyone for 2 years.
Yes.
Think of how miserable it would make him if he had the presidency and no support from Congress and willing to investigate him and stop him from the worst that he could do.
Yes. And I think it's always worth revisiting. Because
just imagine him pissed off. Wouldn't that make you happy?
Like, his tiny hands would be shaking.
Yes.
I think it's... So it's really easy to get caught up in, like, what Trump is doing and why he's a fucking monster. And those things are true. He's a monster. He's doing as much bad as he possibly can. Mostly in the name of undoing anything Obama did. It is worth noting that he has crossed many, 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 many lines, and the fact that he continues to be able to cross them is a result of our Congress being complicit and his nonsense. And I think Trump is such a good target because he is like basically a Democratic movie villain come to life. But it's really important to remember that, like, a lot of these things could be stopped or slowed, or like at least somebody could say, like, hey, dude, could you maybe think about this for 30 seconds before you tweet at Kim? Anyway.
Yeah.
So if we put Democrats or, God, at least non-garbage Republicans in Congress.
Right now, who? I was thinking about this. I'm like, is there any Republican that I was seeing in the primaries this past week, the weeks before? I'm like, which of these Republicans would at least stand up to him? None of them are even saying they would. That's not part of their campaign platforms.
That's not true. Some people are saying, tweeting that they're really disappointed. So
yeah, and I repeat, they are doing nothing to actually stop it. So seriously, go vote for Democrats. What are you doing if you're not?
What are you doing? Do you stop like it. This? Is this what you like?
Go fight it out in the primaries. And if your people lose, go vote for the other Democrat.
Trump literally said today that he really respects how North Koreans pay attention when Kim Jong-un talks, which I need to reiterate. He's a brutal dictator.
I mean, he'll murder you if you don't stand up for him.
He keeps his citizens in abject poverty. He is a nightmare human. And Trump is like, he's dope as hell. But Trudeau, fuck you, dog. You're meek or something. Like, right. It's like a literal dick measuring contest everywhere I look. I hate it. I hate him. I hate the GOP this year.
This year?
This year.
You know who you hate more than the GOP? Say the Storks.
Why would you? Why, though? But Hammett, but why? So all that's so backing
oh, right.
up off our
Ralph
political
Reed and faith and
our political uh-huh. rant. So Hammett got to my house today and was like, oh, I have mail for you. And I was like, it's definitely anthrax or a bomb. Mm-hmm. But it's not. It is from a listener named Sam. And she sent us this Buckwild mailer that she got.
From the Faith and Freedom Coalition.
From the Faith and Freedom Coalition. And it's like these really bad... I think, say what you will about the Democrats... We have all of the good graphic designers because this shit looks like something I did in Photoshop in, not Photoshop, in like Microsoft Paint in 1998. So she sent us this really sweet letter along with it about, she somehow got this. She's a liberal atheist, she said. And she got this Buck Wild pamphlet and annotated it, which Sam, this
which
was
we appreciated.
So good. So it's literally, it looks like somebody printed it off in their in their local
folded.
Kinko's.
Yeah.
It's really upsetting. This is sort of a peek inside, which I mean, I guess we have Fox News, so we always know what they're saying like internally, but this is a really bonkers peek inside to like what they're saying to each other. They are also calling the rapidly approaching 28 congressional elections, quote, the impeachment election. Haven't heard that. President Trump will love seeing these letters of thanks and support, she said, because he's obsessed with himself. And also, they just bold every time it says Trump. But they need a copy editor. Many experts and pundits are predicting a tidal wave election sweep for the radical anti-Christian left, which, like, yeah, but not everybody.
The radical anti-Christian left as opposed to the right, which quotes the Bible to right. separate families and inflict
no,
cruelty
but Hammett,
on kids.
But Hammett, we're the bad guys.
Yes.
Also, they did a really strong mail merge because it says, Samantha, I know I don't have to tell you what's at stake. The anti-Christian, anti-freedom, anti-America left, capital L, has a very different vision for America's future than you and I have. Bullet points. They want to erase America's borders so we no longer have a country. Bullet point. They want to eliminate Christianity as a moral force in American life. Semicolon. And bullet point. They want America to be governed by the United Nations, not our own constitution. They say great, make America great again 37 times. They ask you to donate at least $26.93, which is what they need to stop the left, I guess.
Oh, my God.
President Obama's open border policy is not a thing. Thank you, Sam. Obama's administration's misuse of the Justice Department and other federal agents to prosecute and persecute Christians who express their faith.
Because
what is he
I've gotten
to?
Kim Davis's book in the past, because I've signed up for some of them because this is entertaining reading. I sometimes get these mailers from other conservative groups, and they're always fascinating to read because of how they exaggerate what liberals are doing. They assume we have the money and organization that they do, which we don't.
And your dumb faces.
And they're just like, they're coming after us. They're going to, like, they're going to, whatever. They're going to steal a Supreme Court seat. It's like, that's not us. They're
going to,
like, eradicate Christianity from the public square. It's like, no, neutrality is not eradication. Whatever. They lie right in all of these mailers.
I just, like, I know this is beside the point. But, like, what are they doing with their text here? Like, for the, quote, bolded, lowest propensity, end quote, unbold, potential Christian voters. Like, it's, they have, okay, in all, our army of nearly 10,000 field staff and volunteers, underline, knocked on 1,256,778 doors, end unline, in the key states to conduct, underline, personal, all caps, home visits. Like,
they're very excited about
it. Listen, I know English majors are useless as a people, but God, just like send this to somebody and just have them look it over, you guys. Like, communication is important. Also, it's 25 pages. Like, what the fuck are they doing here?
All right, I'm going to move to a different story.
Anyway,
because
thank you very much, Sam.
Forever.
This was excellent. It made me laugh a whole lot. And thank you for not sending anthrax like I obviously expected.
Let me talk about this study that just came out because I've seen these headlines everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And the study, basically, if you look at the headlines, they say religious people live on average 4 years longer than atheists.
Is that true?
That is so not true. Because if you look at the paper, and this is the problem, here's what they did. These researchers, it was published in the journal Social, Psychological, and Personality Science, legit journal, professors from Ohio State University, legit school. Here's what they basically did. They did two different experiments. The first one said, well, look at the Des Moines Register, a newspaper that prints obituaries. They went through a two-month span from 2012 and basically pulled every obituary that they published in that newspaper. And they looked through it to see which ones mentioned religion in the obituary and how old were they when they died, right? So what they said is those whose obituaries mention an affiliation with the religious organization live nearly a decade longer.
You said this is a legit study?
No, I said the people were legit, the journal's legit. We can criticize the methods here. But they said the obituaries that mentioned religion lived a decade longer. If you take away their marital status differences and the gender differences, trying to equalize it a little bit, religious people still live 6.5 years longer. Okay, so then they did another experiment. Basically, they looked at 42 different cities and a whole bunch of obituaries, but now we're scattered, right? So it's not just one city in case that one has an anomaly. And they found basically 5.6 years longer the religious people live. Mm-hmm. And if you control the other variables, it's still like 3.8 years longer. Moral of the story, according to them, religious people live longer than non-religious people. Mm-hmm. Now, where do you even start with it? Why?
Oh, I've got a list, but you start.
Wrong. One of the things they mentioned, because of course they get to explain their own limitations in a paper like this, and they said, you know, one reason for this may be
one limitation is the whole thing's garbage.
Yeah, many religions restrict behaviors related to health, such as
drinking,
doing drugs, having sex with many partners. Further, religions promote stress-reducing practices. So, basically, saying maybe this stuff is the reason they live longer. First of all, if you're not drinking, doing drugs, or having sex with lots of people, why are you even living?
Yeah.
What's the point? But secondly,
since heaven who has one fucking glass of wine a week at my house, dare you?
But here's the thing, like, this is the same criticism I have every time all these researchers compare religious people to non-religious people and they make these arguments. It's notice that in that explanation, they didn't say, if you believe in God, you are going to live longer.
Finish your thought.
Sure.
I'm going to keep writing.
It's not about believing in God. If you suddenly stop logicking and just start believing it, you're not going to live longer. The issue is being part of a community that I think has your back, that you feel excited about being a part of, that gives you these opportunities to be part of something bigger and volunteer and work with others. Like, that is important. That is a good, healthy thing to do. And churches do a good job of that by and large, but they're not the only game in town. And you see this in big cities, too, where maybe religion isn't as big of a deal if you live in, like, a big urban city. Mm-hmm. But they have other ways that you get to interact with people, whether
bars. It's,
like, a bar and intramural sports or a club or a meetup group
Did
or
you
whatever
mention
it
that
is.
Did you because you wanted to ask about my softball team this week?
Yeah, I want to join it.
Sorry. What? Do you even own sneakers?
I don't appreciate your laughter at me mentioning sport. So... the point is, like, and by the way, they even acknowledged all this quietly in their paper. They said, in less religious cities, non-religiously affiliated people live just as long as religiously affiliated people. That didn't make any of the headlines.
So I didn't even need to write this list.
Right. The point is, like, it's not belief in God. It's being part of a community that, like, you feel like you belong. And by the way, if you go to non-religious countries, predominantly non-religious countries in Europe, where they have like good health care and good education and good everything, those people have long lives too. You don't need God to make that happen.
Hey guys, if you're concerned about people living longer so much and like let them go to doctors, like I don't know what you're talking about. Even if this is true, if you're that concerned, like make healthcare a thing people can get.
So the funny thing is, like, I get these Google alerts anytime people talk about atheism. This article.
Do you have a Google alert for your name?
Yeah, it never comes up.
I can't imagine why.
I know. It's mostly because I need the Google alerts for various spellings of my name. And then sometimes it works. But, like, the point is, all the times they do this, it's like, as soon as they say religious people live longer than non-religious people, everyone's writing about it, and not just random people. It's like mainstream publications are pushing this material out, and the methods of how they figure this stuff out and their analysis of it is so flawed every time.
And I would also like to float this idea. So given my favorite thing to do, given that the premise of religious people live longer than atheists or whatever. So... like, what's actionable about this? Why is this helpful information? Because if you don't believe in God, you don't believe in God. And, like, maybe you can start going to church and, like, talk yourself into it, but that doesn't seem super likely. So are y'all just flaunting it? Or, like, do you need something else to hold above us because your moral superiority is slipping a little bit, re children in cages? Anyway, so the things I had written down, you kind of chomped my flavor on a few of these.
You're welcome.
So I would say not mentioning religion does not mean they were not religious.
Yeah, yes. By the way, I wrote this when I was writing about the Post. Uh-huh. I didn't mention right now, but you're right. The thing is, like, if you're not part of a if you're part of a church, mm-hmm. that's usually something that kind of goes in your bio at the end of your life.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But if you're
if you're not like hashtag spiritual, that's not going to.
What are they going to say? Are you going to, maybe your family doesn't want to say he belonged to an atheist group or he was part of a softball group or whatever? They're not going to mention
those
things
necessarily. If I die tomorrow,
you
better fucking mention that I'm the pitcher on my softball team.
She applied to be the president of Save the Storks.
And we're 0-8, and I want all of that in my.
I will put your losing record in your obituary. But they don't. You're not going to mention that you're not religious as much as like the pride people have if they are.
Right. Well, here's the other thing: is that
and the family, right. Family's writing your obituary in a lot of these cases, and of course they're going to mention your church service or whatever it was.
I don't have the stats in front of me, but I believe older people tend to skew more religious.
Sure.
So I feel like that's sort of a self-selecting thing. If you're seeing a lot of bios from like 20, 30 somethings who arguably died prematurely, it's less likely that they are going to be religious. So if you do live longer, you're more likely to become religious. So
take this away from the study. Anytime you see anyone saying religious people are better in some capacity than non-religious people, almost always, this is the thing to keep in mind. Believing in God is not going to make your life better, but maybe being part of a community will. And that's a difference. And
go join a softball team.
But the headlines will never say that.
No. Almost. I've got another thing.
Yes.
So BuzzFeed released a story about a study that was published in the journal PLOS Medicine.
Yes.
Is it PLOS or
PLOS
is it PLOS?
One? I don't know.
Is it PLOS? So they did a study and were able to identify cities that are at greater risk for outbreaks due to unvaccinated populations. So they did this study, and it was for states that have what do they call it? Non-medical exemptions for vaccines, so NMEs, which isn't a great acronym, but so in other words, you can opt out of vaccinations. And so they looked at these states who have these laws, and so they so researchers looked at the total in the 18 states. So 18 states allow NMEs. The data showed that the NME rates have been on the rise in 12 of those 18 states. And in those areas, fewer children received vaccines such as MMR.
So in these cities, these kids went unvaccinated.
Yeah,
more
so
kids
more likely to go unvaccinated. So looking at the data county by county, researchers identified several hotspots with high prevalence of NMEs. Their concern is because the population, the number of people who are not
vaccinated is so high, herd immunity is not going
to
be as
strong. Do we need to talk about what herd immunity is?
Basically, if people are not vaccinated, the virus has a better chance of spreading. So you want everybody vaccinated to block out that virus.
Yes. It can't transfer from person to person.
In these cities, the virus can spread much more quickly.
Yeah.
And when I looked at that map, because I remember seeing it, I'm like, which cities are these? Which counties are these?
Did you notice that it's all the cities I'm going to this year?
Oh, really?
Yes! Every fucking city I'm going to in 2018 is on this list!
You're gonna die, and then I'm gonna write your obituary.
Mention the softball team. Maybe we'll have a victory by then. So,
some of the counties, I'm like, I think one of them was in Idaho or Oregon, like Multnomah County. And I'm like, that's one of the Christian Science hotbeds where they don't take their kids to doctors
so
at
they
all.
Prayed away.
We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
Their kids died because their parents were like, I'll just pray over you. So, of course, they didn't vaccinate their kids.
Right.
There were some counties, I think, in Texas and Arizona, Joe Arpaio's county in Arizona, his county was on that list, too.
Oh, that monster.
Because, again, conservatives. Very, very conservative. They don't trust the government.
But not universally, because you have your, like, Portland, Oregon's and your Seattle, Washington's that...
Very liberal places.
Very liberal, so they don't have, like, fluoride and shit. So some of these cities are Seattle, going there this year, Spokane, Washington, Phoenix, Salt Lake City, Provo, Utah, Houston, going there twice this year, Austin, my husband's going there this year, Fort Worth, Plano, Texas, Troy, Warren, and Detroit, Michigan, Portland, going there, Kansas City, Missouri, and Pittsburgh.
I'm never visiting you again.
Seriously, what the fuck, y'all? I just want to come, like, keep Portland weird or whatever you guys do out there.
That's not the way to keep it weird.
I hate it. I'm going to Houston twice. That doubles my chances of dying of vaccine.
I'll get your obituary written by next week. Don't worry.
I'm not going up there till July, so fucking hold. Like, don't get too excited to write it.
You want one more? When you're done, let me know. I got one more happy story for you.
Yes, I'm done with that. I read all the things I wanted to and complained.
Ireland, fresh off its repeal of the abortion ban.
Ireland.
They have now scheduled a vote for the referendum to overturn its blasphemy law.
What?
Yes.
Ireland knocking out of the park this year.
Yeah, which is great. And it also makes you wonder, like, what the hell was wrong with you in the past that you did all this stuff, that you had all this on the books?
Momentum, my friend.
But basically, they have this blasphemy law. What it says specifically, this is Article 40.6.1 of the Irish Constitution, the publication or utterance of blasphemous, seditious, or indecent material is an offense which shall be punishable in accordance with the law. That is a very vague statement, because what's blasphemous? What's indecent? It's really in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. But there have been a couple of incidents in the past year or two where people complained that people were being blasphemous, and it's stirred a debate.
Yeah, we've talked about that, right?
We have talked about it. In one case, there was a comedian who appeared on like a late-night Irish talk show, and what he said in this interview is I don't know a lot of young people who are into the Catholic Church. You know, anyone I know who goes to midnight mass, they're not going there for haunted bread. Referring
you
to communion.
You should be a stand-up. Your delivery was
thank you.
Beautiful.
I am a public speaking coach. And people accuse that guy of blasphemy for making a
joke.
Wait,
that was it?
That was it.
Oh, I forgot.
He said some other stuff, but that was the main thing. The other one, the more famous incident, is that comedian Stephen Fry appeared in an Irish interview show. This is in 2015.
For children?
Yeah, basically the host said if you walked up to the pearly gates, and if it was all true, you walked up pearly gates, you were confronted by God, what would Stephen Fry say to him, her, or it? Mm-hmm. And Fry responded famously, I think now, I'll say, bone cancer in children? What's that about? How dare you? How dare you create a world in which there is such misery that's not our fault? It's not right. It's utterly, utterly evil. Why should I respect a capricious, mean-minded, stupid God who creates a world which is so full of injustice and pain? Awesome answer.
That's why Stephen Fry is the shit.
Awesome
answer.
And I would
recommend, if you haven't, watch it. His delivery is like, every time he says, how dare you, is that what he says a few times?
And he's serious when he delivers it.
Oh, it's very
It's not a joke to
no,
him.
No, it's not a bit. It is like him, like his how dare yous are like skeleton shaking.
And by the way, he went on to say later, the God who created this universe, if it was created by God, is quite clearly a maniac, an utter maniac, totally selfish. We have to spend our life on our knees thanking him? What kind of God would do that?
Great answer.
They accused him of blasphemy, and they wanted to fine the station, kind of like it was the Janet Jackson Super Bowl halftime show or something.
Wow, contemporary reference.
You're welcome. I go back 20 years. And so they basically... It could have been like a 25,000 euro, maybe. Fine. It got, they didn't pay it. Like nothing happened.
Pound.
Whatever it
Fuck.
Is. They didn't pay it. The whole incident got so much bad publicity because everyone's like, why would you knock Stephen Fry for that answer? That's fine. So anyway, there are reasons like the blasphemy law comes up. It rarely gets used, but when it does get brought up, it's in like in this threatening way. So this October, the Irish government has now said there is going to be a vote on overturning the blasphemy law, which is fantastic. And by the way, it's not just like a vote on that one issue. This is what's even better. It's taking place at the same time that they're also having an election for other things, too. So like they are also going to be voting on... I can't remember now. They're also voting on like government officials. They're also voting on another issue on women's rights, which means you're going to get a lot of liberals to the polls that day.
Yeah, I was actually going to say my concern with that would be like the home to vote movement that they had for abortion rights and prior for gay marriage. That's like a thing you get on a plane for. It's something that I can imagine people not getting as amped. And like, I will say this for Ireland. They're whoever their kind of liberal social media thing is, are on point. Like their videos are excellent. Mm-hmm. Like they're very, very good. Oh. I could see blasphemy not like making those sort of like high arching, like beautiful stories that make me cry at work. Anyway, go ahead.
I was going to say the other thing that's on the ballot at the same time as this, to be more specific, there is a clause in the Constitution that talks about prioritizing a woman's domestic role over work. They're going to repeal.
I
know. Well, that's the reaction from Irish people, too. So they're going to. Yeah. So they're going to have another vote on that, too. So, you know, those people are going to come out.
What does that even mean, Hemant?
I think it's just one of those archaic things where they had this
prioritizing
a long time ago.
Prioritizing
a woman's domestic role over work. It says that in the Constitution. They're going to get rid of it.
I mean,
if
you want to pay me what I'm paying at work to like stay home, that's fine.
But yeah, by the way, here's the reason this is not just a frivolous, random thing. Because, like, maybe the argument is, well, even if they don't repeal it, it's not like it really gets used.
Right.
But the thing is, other more scarier nations on this issue, places like Pakistan, where people have been, like, sentenced to death for blaspheming.
For, like, doing what we're doing right now.
For doing what we're doing right now. They say, well, we can have this blasphemy law. Ireland has it, and no one thinks Ireland is, like, a bad country.
Does that happen?
Yeah. They point to Ireland as a good example of the blasphemy law.
Ireland.
So, like, Ireland has a good reason to say we need to get rid of this because we're better than that. We don't need to do that. So hats off to Atheist Ireland and all these other groups that were fighting for years to get this on the ballot.
Doing the good work.
And they finally got it done. So October, that's when the vote's going to take place. More power to them. And I guess while we're on the subject, let me give one more story here that's sad, and then I'm done with everything on my list.
Okay.
That I want to talk about.
One more thing, but yeah.
Which is that in Bangladesh, this is the site of a lot of, in previous years, a lot of atheists have been murdered in Bangladesh because they were bloggers, because they talked openly about religion and being critical of it. They've been slaughtered by Islamic radical terrorists. This has happened in the past. Mm-hmm. But then over the past couple of years, like, the police did a little more. They said, we're really going to go after these people, the people who are attacking them.
Uh-huh.
And they kind of did. Like, they arrested people. They put people in jail over it. They seem to take it more seriously. And for, like, the past couple of years, we haven't really seen more violence against blasphemers, quote unquote. And then, unfortunately, that changed this week. Earlier this week, an atheist poet and publisher, his name is Shah Zahan Bachu, he was shot to death earlier this week. We don't know who did it. They haven't announced the names. Sure, we could speculate and assume this was a, like, he's an atheist, so these radical Islam Muslims came after him. We don't know that yet. But according to witnesses, there were five assailants on two motorcycles who got him. They blasted a crude bomb outside a pharmacy, creating panic. And when he came out, they shot him. That is the story that witnesses say.
And you said they don't know who did it. Do they expect it's a government-sanctioned thing or just
No, not government-sanctioned necessarily. No one's making that claim. It's just that this happened. And, like, what else? What are you going to do? He had been a target in the past, I will say that. And he didn't sleep in his house. One article that was written a couple of years ago said this guy doesn't sleep in his house. He frequently changes where he's hiding out to kind of escape from the militants. But then this died down for a couple of years, so you think he's in the clear. And that's not the case. Andrew Copson, he's the president of the International Humanist and Ethical Union, kind of a worldwide humanist organization. He said very clearly, we're devastated that the specter of violence has returned to the free-thinking community in Bangladesh. He said, we once again call on the government of Bangladesh to root out the jihadi networks perpetrating these crimes and on the international community to bring pressure to bear on Bangladesh to protect and defend its humanists and human rights defenders. I would add one more story to this, which is Asif Mohiuddin. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, but he was another one of these atheists who was attacked in 2013. They basically slit his throat, but he survived the attack. So he's still around and he's still active. After this death happened this week, he posted something on Facebook. It was a rough translation because he wrote it in a different language. Mm-hmm. But one of the stories he told is that a couple of years ago, he told Bachu, you know, you need to watch out for extremists because they're going to come after you too. And Bachu didn't take him seriously at the time. He kind of just said, who will kill me? Mm. Well,
that's really sad.
So it is sad. It's extremely sad. I don't have a but to that. But it's happening. This happened again. We're seeing it again. The question I have now is this the start of something horrible, even worse, that more people are going to go? Or what's the Bangladeshi government going to do now?
Yeah.
Because they had an opportunity years ago and they failed. It took all these deaths for them to do something about it. I wonder how they're going to respond now. But just a sad, horrible story that happened.
Yeah, that's so scary to hear because I think I get really...
For doing the shit we do, you
know? That's exactly where I was going. Of like, we've done this for 3-ish years now, and like, you know, we get shit, and it's not, like, for me, it's not been, like, consequence-free. I've definitely, like, had some, but nothing dangerous or life-changing, and it's horrifying to think that in 2018, like, literally, if you put us in a different part of the world doing literally exactly this, it's a death sentence. And that, like, it's not even, it won't even sink in my head because that is such a, like, my biggest concern is that, like, my boss is going to listen to this and hear me say fuck a bunch of times. You know what I mean? Right. And, like, probably won't be crazy about that. I just, I don't know. I can't believe that this is still something we're living with. Anyway, I was going to say something stupid about in Parliament in the UK, Sir Christopher Chope held up a bill that would send people who take upskirt shots.
Okay.
They could go to jail, and everyone's like, yeah, this should be a law. And he was like, no, let's talk about it more, and delayed it. I don't know. It was expected to pass. Parliamentary rules mean it only requires one MP to shout object to... Man,
so he objected to an upskirt.
Parliament has this shit going on. They just yell shit, and they're like, cool, law stopped.
Wait, so he delayed the upskirt ban vote?
He's yet to speak about why he blocked the bill, but upskirting victim Gina Martin, who started the campaign for the new law, said he had told her that he objected to it, quote, on principle, because it wasn't debated. So essentially, parliamentary law works. But this is like his whole jam, is like if something is, everybody's like, yeah, this needs to go through. If it doesn't get debated, he'll just hold it up on principle because whatever. Which, I don't know, maybe I could get behind that, but I did not learn all about parliamentary law today as I was doing research for this podcast. People are really fucking pissed about this. George Freeman, who used to lead Theresa May's policy unit, said the move was, quote, an affront to parliamentary democracy. Oh, man, why did I think I could say British words? Chetlinham.
You have MP, failed. I don't know what it is.
Chetlinham. Chetlinham. I'm sticking with it. MP Alex Chalk said, Sir, and he's a sir. Did I mention that part? We need to bring sirs over here. I'd love to be Dame Jessica. Sir Christopher has, quote, let us all down. Scottish Conservative MP Paul Masterson, these are all members of his party, said the move did, quote, damage to the public's view of the party. Liberal Democrat MP Wera Hobhouse, top shelf names, who brought the private members bill to Parliament, also criticized the out of touch Tory for sabotaging it. And Conservative MP and the chair of the Commons Foreign Select Committee, Tom Tugendhat, said it was shaming for his party. Quote, it's really objectionable that Christopher should have done this without even knowing what the bill was. I think it's disgraceful to block a law that's designed to protect people from having their most intimate cells.
These are adorable little problems where you object on principle.
It's completely unacceptable.
When we have politicians who won't block anything, even when it's just ridiculously...
They're
not blocking it on principle. They're letting it go because they don't disagree with it.
Anyway, that's what's going on. UK, never change. I just like that they yell a lot. Have you ever like watched Parliament in
Some of those little
it's
clips.
It's just so great. Just the shouting. Because it feels at least earnest.
And you know that people in Britain like hate it and think like they think their government is dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And then we watch
Sorry,
it.
Sorry,
like,
guys. We have a lock on that. Yeah. Are you done
I'm
with
done.
Your things? So I had this letter, and it's a little long. I'm going to try to summarize it somewhat. It's pretty interesting, and I think that that it is probably a situation a lot of people find themselves in. Jessica Hammond, I'm writing on behalf of a great friend of mine who's not a listener but is an atheist. She's recently married, has 3 stepchildren, 15, 12, and 6. So they live with her friend who she's given the pseudonym Kate. And her husband full-time, and they visit their mother out of state a couple times a year. Their mother doesn't sound like the most savory character, but she has since found religion after a sort of troubled past. So apparently whenever these kids go to visit this mother-in-law, they come back with the stories of indoctrination. So, and not just...
So if I have this right, you had... A dad and a mom, they're divorced, and when the kids go with the mom, they come back indoctrinated.
It is the mother. I'm sorry, I thought it was mother-in-law. Right. It is the mother. So and so they only have very limited access to their mother. Yeah. So they come back with sort of indoctrination stories, which aren't just like, oh, do you know what Noah's Ark is? But so they return from this summer's visit telling stories of her teaching the youngest to pray to heal wounds and illness, such as the finger she broke when the door was actually shut on it. She doesn't, the letter writer does not think that that injury ever received medical attention. They've been giving books like The Awesome Book of Bible Answers for Kids, which answers questions such as, quote, my friend doesn't go to church, what should I do? And what will happen to people who don't obey the Bible? The middle girl was also given vitamins because she was, quote, emotionally difficult. And so her question is this. How do you suggest that the letter writer's friend, husband, approach the conversation? So it's not even about what do you say to the mother. How do you approach the conversation with the youngest two? And as a reminder, they are 12 and 6.
I was thinking about this. I think there were two ways to kind of handle this. One is, look, you can't really stop the kids from going to their mother right. and getting indoctrinated by her or attempted indoctrination. So you talk to the kids. They're old enough.
Six?
To basically, six, and the other one's older, right?
12.
12. To tell them basically, look, your mother believes this stuff. I'm not disparaging her. I'm not disparaging the beliefs because that's opening a whole different can of worms. Mm-hmm. She believes this stuff. We don't, as yeah. the other parents. And make sure the kids hear your side of things, too, because you can challenge it. You can question the stuff they're learning and say, well, where do you think? What do you think happens if you make a mistake? Who's responsible? Like, how do you take responsibility yeah. if you make a mistake? That's one way to deal with it, is just to make sure they know this isn't what everyone believes. This is what your mother believes, and we don't. And guess what? That's okay.
Right.
You don't have to believe this stuff either. But you got to hear the different sides. That's one.
I think that's fair. My concern is like six is extremely young, and there are definitely people who have spoken of their own sort of past kind of echoes of trauma, kind of like having literally the fear of God put into mm-hmm. them of if you mess up, or, you know, the thought
and this
police
is where it's
aspect
really,
of it kind of
where
freaks
it's very
me out.
Helpful to have another parent who's saying, well, I don't believe that stuff, and I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to help.
I think the thing is, a summer is a long time.
It is a long time.
Especially for a kid that age.
And the other thing to think about is, I don't know where the writer was from. I don't know where these parents are from.
Yeah,
but, like, depending on the state, depending on the courts, this is where, I don't know what the situation is, but religion is usually one of those things you talk about when you get divorced with a judge.
Oh, really?
Where you talk about how are these kids going to be raised? And this is something both parents have to agree on. And so I don't know if this is a thing you could talk to a judge about or a divorce lawyer
yeah.
about. But
well,
this is where you say, like, what the mother is doing is so far, like, above and beyond what she should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wouldn't be okay to tell your kids, like, your mother's an idiot for believing in God, we're atheists, whatever,
mm-hmm.
that wouldn't be okay either, especially if you're sharing, you know,
well,
custody.
And I think the other problem is that she says her friend is afraid to push too hard on the subject because it's a tricky situation. She's a stepmom,
right.
and they've been really contentious in the past, and they're all finally on civil terms. So I think she wants to do this as gracefully as possible without kind of causing waves, but I don't know if that's an option.
Right.
Right? Like, this isn't like, hey, you're feeding my kid meat, I would rather you not. Like, that feels like something you could have a conversation about.
Right.
This is the thing you believe and are telling your children is wrong, and I don't want them hearing that.
I wonder if dad can talk to the mom too.
Yeah.
Or is that a conversation they could have or no? Because maybe the answer is no. Maybe you can't talk to her about this stuff, and maybe that's why they got divorced. Who knows? But somewhere along the line, you're right. It does go too far. You may be traumatizing those kids. So the options are make sure they're hearing alternative perspectives.
Yeah.
Or if it's going even further than that, then you got to get someone else involved and have someone else step in, whether it's a judge or a lawyer or whatever, because it's not right that one parent can just, like, traumatize/dominate their kids thinking about this stuff to the point where it just overshadows what the other parent's doing.
Right.
Especially if it's just they have shared custody of these kids.
Yeah. And I think the idea of saying these books that they're getting that are not just like, this is the Bible, this is what, but it's my friend doesn't go to church, what should I do? That, like, that's alarming because that, I don't know. I don't like any of it, but it's an, I don't know why we think we could give advice. I don't like, it's an impossible situation. I think you're right. I think open lines of communication with your kids would be the start of it, right? Like six is so young, but especially with the 12-year-old, like, people believe different things.
Right. 12-year-old may be able to resist or fight back or say, wait, that doesn't make any sense.
Or resist, but just understand, like, some people believe this thing, she believes this, and I don't. I don't know. Talking to a 6-year-old, I don't know if that would be.
Yeah, that might be harder.
Yeah. Anyway, Hammond, what's your happy thing this week?
You go first, I'm thinking.
So, I have two things.
What?
Yeah. My shit doesn't suck for once. First of all, okay, I literally didn't say anything to anybody, but last night I went to a concert of two of the Surviving Monkeys, the 1960s group, and I went by myself because I've been a huge fan of the Monkees since I was in, like, junior high, and I, like, took myself on a little me date. I got sushi for dinner. I got a drink before the show. I went to the show by myself, and it was so much fucking fun. I need to be like, this is their, like, it's just after their 60th, or excuse me, their 50th anniversary of forming as a group. So these boys are in their 70s. And Hemant, A, the crowd is packed. B, standing ovation every song. Every song, people are on their feet. It was so great. It was Mike Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz. Mike Nesmith is the reason I learned how to play guitar. Like, his song Nine Times Blue is my favorite. And he sounds incredible. Like, it was so, it was just like this treat for myself because I was unemployed/underemployed for such a long time that I was like, wow, for the first time in a long time, I can afford to, like, just take myself out. And it was excellent. My other happy thing is it's Star Wars Day.
After this.
Finally.
We will post it as a bonus episode.
Carved some time out of his busy schedule. So Hemant came over here at like 5. We recorded this. My husband just walked in the door. We're going to order some pizza. We're going to watch Star Wars. And then we're going to record another podcast.
You will hear my reactions to seeing this movie.
I'm very excited. I need to make sure we all have notebooks.
We're watching what, episode 9?
Yep, 9. You got it.
Got it.
Actually, 9 is a real thing, I think, now. Yeah. No, it's not. 7, 8. No, 9 isn't a thing yet. We're going to be watching Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, which came out in a year that I know, but I'm not going to tell.
All right, I'll tell you more about that.
You have to tune in.
So that'll be a bonus episode for Patreon supporters.
Yeah, anybody who's a Patreon donor can access it. And, like, you can pay $1 a month and you have access to this and a handful of other bonus episodes that we, you ask.
It's starting.
Mikey's so excited. I hope you can hear he's playing the Star Wars theme. He just marched through the house. we're about to go downstairs and order some pizza and do that. It's gonna. Oh, yeah, yeah. I somehow lost my train of thought. I don't know why. Nobody interrupted me. but you can just donate $1 a month to the Patreon and you have access to this and then my other kind of bonus series that I've been doing called Fables, which actually Mikey's and my episode should go up in the next couple. I know I keep pushing it off, but
we're gonna post the Star Wars one, then we'll post the other ones.
Yeah,
but there'll be bonus episodes. Yeah, if you're a Patreon, you'll hear all about it.
Yeah, if you're on Patreon, you get early access to our regular episodes, access to bonus episodes. At certain levels, you get a cross stitch from me, a note from me and Hammond. You get a shout out.
So many things. Go do
it. So many things. How can you afford not to? Is my question.
Unless you're donating to save the storks, in which case.
Hammond, stop
saying
it.
That's how they make the videos.
I hate it.
It explains it.
All right. Email if you have any questions that you want us to almost answer, you can email us at friendlyatheistpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to say some shit about Hammond and just want to email me, you can email me at fablespod at gmail.com. Leave us an iTunes review, but don't say mean things because I read them all and I read them to my husband and I yell. 5 stars, please. Follow me on Twitter, Blueberry, BLUEBURIE. Hammond's at Hammond Meta.
Yep.
That's it. See you in a couple hours. Bye.